This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Song of Solomon. Now, here's Pastor Sandy as he teaches through the book of Song of Solomon, chapters 1 through 4.
Well, there was this pig farmer who wanted to breed 3 sows with his neighbor's boar. He loaded the sows up in the back of his pickup truck and he drove them to his friend's farm where he put the sows in the pen with the male pig. Well, when he returned later that afternoon, he asked his neighbor how he'd know if the mating had been successful. And so his friend explained to him, he said, well, in the morning, look outside, and if the pigs are rolling in the grass, you know it took. But if they're rolling in the mud, you know it didn't. Well, the next morning, the farmer, he ran to the window, he looked outside to check on his sows, and there they were, all 3 girls were rolling in the mud. The farmer, though, he decided to try again. So he loaded the pigs back into his pickup truck, he drove them back to the farm. Again, he put them in the pen with the male pig, the boar. Well, when he arrived later in the day to pick them up, again he asked, now let me make sure I've got this straight. When will I know that little piglets are on the way? The neighbor repeated himself. He said, well, in the morning, if they're rolling in the grass, it took. If they're rolling in the mud, you know it didn't. So as soon as he woke up the next morning, he looked out the window and there were the 3 pigs stuck in the mud. Undaunted, he loaded the 3 sows back into his pickup truck for the 3rd time, took them back to his neighbor's farm, put them back into the pen with the male pig. This time, at the end of the day, when he went to pick them up, he asked his friend, he said, now let me make sure I got this straight. In the grass, good. In the mud, bad. You got it. Well, that night, the farmer had to go out of town. But the next morning, he called his wife. He was anxious. He said, honey, look out the window and tell me, are the sows in the grass or in the mud? Well, he waited and he waited and he waited. Finally, she returned to the phone. He said, honey, he said, I gotta know, are the pigs rolling in the grass or are they rolling in the mud? She responded, neither. 2 of them are in the back of your pickup truck and 1 is in the cab honking a horn. Well, evidently, his friend's male pig was no boar. The point of the story is that God created sex not just for breeding, but for blessing. That he designed sex not just for procreation, but for pleasure. You know, if all God cared about was repopulating the planet, then cloning or cell division would have done the trick. But sex brings a husband and a wife together in a manner that maximizes intimacy and enhances enjoyment. Sex fuses 2 lives and solidifies their commitment and their closeness. Hey, when God created sex, like everything else that he created, he said that it was good. The Song of Solomon describes for us just how lavish a source of intimacy and ecstasy sex can be between a husband and a wife. You know, since sex is so often abused and misused in our culture, we can get the impression that it's evil, but not so. That is certainly not God's take on the subject. Proverbs 5, verse 18 and 19 declares, "Rejoice with the wife of your youth. Let her breast satisfy you at all times. Always be enraptured with her love." Hey, God is no prude. In fact, the Song of Solomon is so graphic, the language so erotic and sensual, the Jewish rabbis prohibited their young men from even reading the book until they had reached the age of 30 years old. The Song of Solomon, my friend, will steam your glasses. It'll race your pulse. It'll cause your face to blush. But just remember, God isn't blushing. He wrote the book on sex, and he wants us to enjoy it in our marriages and relish it to the fullest. God wrote the book on sex, and like the rest of the Bible, God wants the Song of Songs read and understood and even modeled in our marriages. You know, it's true, the Song of Solomon is an oriental love song. Its immediate subject is eroticism and marital lovemaking. But that's not all that it is. For the Song of Solomon also has a deeper, more spiritual meaning. The Jews sensed the book's spiritual significance and they gave it special reverence. In fact, in the Jewish Mishnah, Rabbi Akiba is quoted as saying, "In the entire world, there is nothing equal to the day on which the Song of Solomon was given to Israel. All writings are holy, but the Song of Songs is most holy." In the Old Testament, God illustrated his relationship with the Hebrews through marriage. He was the husband, and Israel was the bride. Of course, in the New Testament, Jesus is our bridegroom, and the church is his bride. Song of Solomon allegorizes the intimacy that God desires with his people. The song reminds us that Jesus is not just Lord of my life, but he also wants to be lover of my soul. The Song of Solomon will stretch us spiritually. One commentator writes this, "No book furnishes a better test than does this song of the depth of a man's Christianity. If his religion is only in his head as dry doctrine, he'll see nothing here to attract him. But if it has a hold of his heart, this will become a favorite portion of his Bible." I like to treat the Song of Songs as God intended. It's a celebration of marital love. I don't over-allegorize it, but when the parallels are helpful, I'll try to point them out to you. Well, verse 1 introduces the book, the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. I read this week that Dolly Parton has written 600 songs. Well, according to 1 Kings 4, verse 32, Solomon wrote 1,005 songs. Only three have survived. Psalm 72 and Psalm 127, they were hits, but the Song of Songs went platinum. It reached number one on the Hebrew top 40. You know, the phrase King of Kings refers to the king who is above all other kings. Well, the Song of Songs is the song that is above all other songs. This was the first or the best or the most excellent of all Solomon's songs, the Song of Songs. The Song of Solomon was actually a cantata. It was sort of more opera. It was a song that told a story. Three speakers convey the story here in this book. King Solomon, his Shulamite bride, and the daughters of Jerusalem, or her girlfriends. And of course, every guy knows that if you want to marry a girl, you got to impress her girlfriends. The one problem in the Song of Solomon is you're not always sure who's talking. The New King James Version does a good job of inserting headings that identify the speaker. And though the headings aren't perfect, they're certainly helpful, and we'll sort of follow along with those headings as we go. Chapter 1 introduces the young bride that Solomon brings to his palace in Jerusalem. In the song, she's called the Shulamite. She was from the town of Shunem. Solomon met her while traveling through the mountains of Lebanon, and he became mesmerized by her rustic beauty and her country charm. The Shulamite was basically a hillbilly. She was sort of an Ellie Mae Clampett. Or if you don't remember Ellie Mae, she was kind of like a Daisy Duke. She was beautiful but backwoods. Here was the original hee-haw honey. But this was why Solomon had fallen in love with her. His palace was packed with cover girls, pampered pinups with store-bought beauty. The Shulamite, oh, she was different. Hers was a natural beauty. Here was a woman of virtue. Neither her beauty nor her character had been defiled by the big city. The Shulamite worked as a shepherdess, tending her brother's flocks. And when Solomon saw her, oh, it was probably love at first sight. But he hid his royal identity at first. He made sure that her love for him was genuine. He didn't reveal that he was the king until he had returned to Lebanon to take her to Jerusalem. Now, here's sort of an overview of the song. Chapters 1 and 2 are the early days of their marriage. They are enjoying this newfound love. But like all newlyweds, the couple has some adjustments to make. The last half of chapter 3 into chapter 5 flashes back to their honeymoon. Solomon came in his royal coach to transport his bride to his palace. From Lebanon to Jerusalem, they celebrate with lavish lovemaking. By the middle of chapter 5, the honeymoon's over. The Shulamite has a dream in which God alerts her to some coldness that has settled in and crept into her marriage. In chapter 6 through 8, she responds to that dream and she learns some important lessons that revive the intimacy in her marriage. She develops a new attitude and a new aggressiveness and a new atmosphere. They finally return to the country where their romance began, and the book closes with the couple in the countryside on a second honeymoon. We'll cover chapters 1 through 3. Next week, we'll study from chapter 4 through chapter 8. Well, the dialogue begins here in verse 2. The Shulamite, or Shula as we'll call her, she sets a tone for the book. She says, "Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine." What's a kiss? Here's a definition that a college student shared with his girlfriend. "Before I heard my professor tell the facts about a kiss, I had considered kissing you the closest thing to bliss. But now I know biology and sit and sigh and moan. 6,000 small bacteria, and I thought we were alone." Apparently, a kiss is a form of germ warfare. Biologically speaking, I guess a kiss doesn't sound very appealing. The exchange of bacteria, yet romantically, oh my, a kiss, it creates a spark and it fuels a passion. A kiss is an expression of intimacy. It ignites the flame of desire. You know, I always said that a kiss is a good thing because you're so close to your spouse that they can't see any of their faults. It's a great enjoyment, a kiss. And notice here who initiates the kiss. Not Solomon. It's the Shulamite. The wife here is the aggressor. You know, in many marriages today, it's sort of assumed that the wife plays defense and the husband plays offense. But you got to know, that's not biblical. Here it's the woman who tells her husband what she wants from him. You see, God's idea of sex is for both spouses to be on the offense. Nobody plays defense. There's no offsides in marriage or holding penalties, aren't you glad? Or illegal use of hands or pass interference. All passes need to be enjoyed in marriage. You know, as single Christians, we're told that sex outside of marriage is sinful, and it is. We see it abused by the world around us. And as a result, many Christian women carry a negative view of sex into their marriage. They treat sex as something that's dirty and shameful. It's an activity to be endured rather than enjoyed. And yet, from the outset, the Shulamite, she counters that attitude. She feels free to express herself sexually. She is the one who initiates the kiss, and she's the one that says to her husband, "Your love is better than wine." It reminds me of the guy who whispered to his wife, "Honey, kisses are the language of love." She replied, "Well, you better speak up." The Shulamite is in love. And she longs for Solomon's kisses. And notice too, she says, "Your love is better than wine." You know, wine has a fourfold effect on a person. It's sweet to the taste. It quenches your thirst. It's intoxicating and causes you to come back for more. And then it's also addictive. It causes you to lose your inhibitions and you forget who you were and what you are and where you are. You lose all of those inhibitions. And this is how the Shulamite views sexual love. It's sweet to her taste, and it's quenching a thirst, a desire inside, and it's intoxicating and causes her to lose her inhibitions, and it's also addictive. She wants more. She says, "Your love, Solomon, is better than wine." Now, here's an appropriate spiritual application. Psalm 2, verse 12 says this, "Kiss the Son." Did you know that we kiss Jesus, not literally, not going to creep you out or anything. We kiss Jesus, not literally, but relationally. When we express our desire to follow him, our longing to know him, our intention to walk with him, this is a kiss in a spiritual sense. A spiritual kiss is a prayer or a song or a praise or a thank you. And in turn, Jesus kisses us when we sense his warmth and his approval. He kisses us when his spirit reveals his presence or his power or his plan to our hearts. And as with any kiss, this kind of exchange, it excites and it sparks and it ignites a flame. Truly, the kisses of Jesus also are better than wine. Well, the Shulamite continues in verse 3. Because of the fragrance of your good ointments, your name is ointment poured forth. Therefore, the virgins love you. Draw me away. Now recall, the queen, she's in some new surroundings here. During her country courtship, it was just her and her shepherd, just the two of them, Shlomo and Shula. The days were free, the hours were private, the duties were light. But now she's in Jerusalem, and she is the wife of the king. Now she has servants and responsibilities, and Solomon is about his daily duties. He's busy attending to affairs of state. Often he's late returning home to the palace. Life has changed for her. She's not used to sharing her husband. And worse, she has become painfully aware that in the palace there are other women who long for her husband. Oh, she sees the looks. They'd love to be with the king. Suddenly she realizes that she has competition. And she wishes the king would just take her away. Take me back to the country, she says. In the next line, the daughters of Jerusalem, the palace maidens, they express their desire for Solomon. They say, we will run after you. The Shulamite counters by reminding them all that the king has chosen her. She says, no, the king has brought me into his chambers. That doesn't quench, though, the longing of these maidens. They say of Solomon, we will be glad and rejoice in you. We will remember your love more than wine. The Shulamite can't argue. She understands what they see in him. She responds, rightly do they love you. All this competition, all this vying for Solomon's affections, it starts to breed in the Shulamite some insecurities. And she begins to doubt her attractiveness. Verse 5, I am dark but lovely, O daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, like the curtains of Solomon. Do not look upon me, because I am dark, because the sun has tanned me. My mother's sons were angry with me. They made me the keeper of the vineyards, but my own vineyard I have not kept. She mourns the fact that her skin is tough and tanned. And she's comparing herself now with the palace princesses. I mean, they're always indoors. I mean, these girls have unlimited Mary Kay budgets. They're always pampered with bubble baths and moisturizers. They've got these creamy complexions. Oh, but the Shulamite, she's been out in the fields, exposed to the wind, under the hot summer sun. She's been caring more about her brother's sheep than about her own appearance. And when she compares herself with the maidens in the royal court, she feels inferior, and she wonders why in the world Solomon would love her. This also helps explain the spiritual experience of many Christians. They too live under the cloud of doubt and insecurity. They're haunted by their flaws and their blemishes and their failures. How could Jesus love the likes of me? And so often we feel so unworthy of his affections. And like the Shulamite, our inferiority is even heightened by the purity and holiness of the people around us that we witness. Well, verse 7 indicates just how deep the Shulamite's insecurities run. She says, tell me, O you whom I love, where you feed your flock, where you make it rest at noon, for why should I be as one who veils herself by the flocks of your companions? She feels so inadequate that she wants to hide behind a veil. And every husband in this room tonight needs to listen up to me now. For just like the Shulamite, your wife has some misgivings about her physical appearance. A recent Harris poll revealed that 99% of all women, that's a lot of women. That's a pretty good proportion. That 99% of all women wish they could change something about their bodies. Hey, all you have to do is look at the popularity of breast implants and fanny tucks and facelifts. It all testifies to the reality of female insecurities. Men, your wife won't give herself freely and uninhibitedly to you unless she is certain that you are satisfied with what you're getting. That means, and I want to say this gently as I can, that means you are an idiot if you ever criticize or talk down about her appearance. You're an idiot if you ever make that mistake. If you want her to want you, you need to praise how she looks. You need to tell her how much you love all of the special features with which God has created her in her. And even the features she's added over the years, you need to tell her how much you like those too. The more assurance you bring, the more affirmation you send, the more trust she has in your appreciation and your acceptance, the more she'll be able to open up and loosen up in her sexual expression. Well, this is exactly what Solomon does here. He speaks to her concerns in verse 8. If you do not know, O fairest among women, follow in the footsteps of the flock and feed your little goats beside the shepherd's tents. Notice this, she's not fairer than most or one of the fairest. No, he refers to her as fairest of all. Solomon praises her beauty and assures the Shulamite that as far as he's concerned, she has no competition. She has no rival in his heart. You know, for years, radical feminist Gloria Steinem used to say the reason she never married was because she could never mate in captivity. Well, if Gloria wants to compare herself with a wild animal, I suppose that's up to her. But most of the women that I speak to, they talk of marriage not as a captivity, but as an opportunity for creativity. It's only when you're sure of your husband's approval and devotion and that he's going to be there again and again and again, only then can you release mentally and relax emotionally and explode sexually. This means that if a husband wants a fun, vibrant sex life, he needs to show sensitivity to his wife's insecurity. If you're a husband, you want to write that down, you need to show a sensitivity to your wife's insecurity. Your acceptance can put her at ease. Now Solomon continues in verse 9. I have compared you, my love, to my filly among Pharaoh's chariots. Pharaoh's filly. This might have been an Egyptian princess. Kings in those days would seal treaties by giving a daughter in marriage to their ally. This woman may have joined Solomon's harem as a diplomatic maneuver. Whatever the circumstances, though, the presence of this woman had added to the Shulamite's insecurities. I mean, what's a country girl compared to an Egyptian princess? Or so she thought. Solomon lets the Shulamite know that she is the only one for him. He adds in verse 10, your cheeks are lovely with ornaments, your neck with chains of gold. And then the daughters chime in, we will make your ornaments of gold with studs of silver. In other words, her jewelry is on order. She too will soon enjoy the advantages of palace life. You know, her ornaments are coming. You know, it's interesting, our King Jesus also clothes us with spiritual gifts. You know, you see yourself as you used to be, but he sees you clothed with his righteousness, blessed with his gifts. He sees you as adorned and decked out in the grace that he's lavished upon you. God's grace not only chooses us and saves us, but it blesses us and adorns us.
The beautiful poem found in Song of Solomon was written from a lover to the object of his affection. It paints a picture for us of the incredible image of the love and dedication that exists inside a marriage. The union that's celebrated also gives us a clear view of the commitment God has made to us, His church, His bride. God loves us perfectly and more fully than we can experience here on earth. That love will last for eternity. We can dwell in it always. We are so glad you joined us for today's message. Would you like to hear more teachings from Pastor Sandy? You can do so by visiting sandyadams.org, where we've cataloged all of his messages from God's Word. Scroll down to the bottom of the page to select which book of the Bible you'd like to explore, or you can search for keywords or topics under the Sermons tab. You can even access these teachings through our mobile app, available for iPhone, Android, and Windows phones. Are you in the Atlanta area? If so, we'd love to meet you and have you join us for our time of worship and Bible study on Sunday morning at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. Find out what you can expect when you visit and get service times at sandyadams.org. That's all we have time for today. May God continue to bless you as you study the truth and love found in His Word. And be sure to join us again for another edition of Sandy Adams Radio.